Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Tina. Tina, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good, thank you. I was a little bit sick last week. I talk loads on the podcast about balance and like how important it is to do this and do that. And then I go away and like work like a madman, never sleep and get really stressed and then wonder why I get sick. So I'm one of these guys, Tina, that's great at giving advice, but perhaps I need to listen back to some of the old episodes and start taking some of it.
Yes, absolutely. You got to get that rest. You got to get the rest.
Yeah, definitely. But I've had a few recruiters on the show lately. I'm looking forward to you being on today, Tina. It's amazing when I get reached out to by different members of the security community, especially with the market the way it is now. I think people like to hear two recruiters chatting away and getting a bit of an insight from this side of the fence. But for those of the listeners that haven't met you before, I'll just do you a bit of an intro. Started off, back in Cisco in the early 2000s as a technical recruiter. You were then part of Boston Scientific, again as a recruiter. Again at Thermo Fisher Scientific as a talent partner recruiter. You spent some time at eBay. And then you progressed on to Arbitra, a Hewlett-Packard company, where you progressed up to be a manager in the recruiting world. You were then doing some recruitment for LinkedIn, which is brilliant. I didn't even realize that, which is great. Then you moved up in your career. You were a director of global talent acquisition for Forescout Technologies, Inc. And you were there for almost 5.5 years. And currently, you are at Palo Alto. You started off as the manager of go-to-market recruiting, and you are now the director. Tina Conn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for inviting me.
No worries. Did I get your intro about right? Did we do okay?
Yes, you did. Yeah, it's interesting to hear it back sometimes. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot I did that. Oh, yeah.
What's it like recruiting for LinkedIn? What's that like?
It was actually, I specifically wanted to go there because I wanted to be on the other side and hear all the latest and greatest and just really hone in on my sourcing skills. So it was great. It was actually a really fun job. I was remote there, so I didn't go into the office very often, but it was a great gig. I met some great people there as well.
Yeah, cool. Do you know what? I can remember once I had some of our sources through the LinkedIn training, and it was brilliant. Like our rep from LinkedIn went through loads of stuff and showed us all loads of stuff on Recruiter that, to be quite honest, we weren't familiar with. And I can remember the woman from LinkedIn saying, you'd be amazed, no one else rings up for this training. No one realizes the capability. So I can believe it when you say it, Tina, about getting an additional insight, because we were shocked at the capabilities and what you could actually do with LinkedIn when we took the time. So I'm imagining you found a similar scenario, did you?
Yeah, for sure. I went through, it's funny, they have the LinkedIn certification training. And so while I was there, I did that. And I am terrible at taking tests. So I thought I was a really good sourcer, a recruiter. And so I was really confident in myself. And then as I start taking the test, I'm just like, oh my gosh, what if I do not pass this? I am going to be so just embarrassed and disappointed in myself. I did pass it, but it was a hard certification, in my opinion. But it was great. I liked hearing so much more about just the total addressable market and the global total addressable market, and kind of just more, it was a very data driven role. So it was great.
Yeah, cool. I think as a recruiter, especially when you're kicking around in the same space all the time, it's quite easy for us to get, you might be the same, Tina, like when you're specializing in a certain area, it's quite easy to get lazy because you get to know a lot of people. Sometimes you can just pick up the phone and make stuff happen. So to do a course like that probably pushes you back to your limits again and gets you improving. I bet it's good.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
Cool. All right, Tina, well, I've done you a bit of an intro, but I can never think I can do it as well as you. I'll start off where I normally start, which is, who are you? What do you get up to on a day-to-day basis? And what's a day in the life like at the minute?
Yeah. So yeah, you summarized very well my career. A little bit more about me. I've been recruiting for a while, as you mentioned, going back into the early 2000s, which is crazy because it feels like that's just 10 years ago, but really it's double that. So like many people, and I think you and I may have talked about this, but I fell into recruiting I do share this on my LinkedIn profile, but I got into recruiting because someone liked my purse. And it's a funny story, but that purse changed my life. I was at a job fair and walking around, like not knowing. At the time, I was like an HR admin. And I was just like, I don't know what I want to do next, but I just know I don't want to do this. And so let me go to this job fair. And walking around, and I get called over to a booth. This woman, Diane, says, oh my gosh, I love your purse. Where did you get it? And we just start talking. And she's, what kind of job are you looking for? And I'm like, I have no idea. And she told me she's looking for a university relations recruiter and that I should come in and talk to her. And so I said, sure, why not? So I went in and she pretty much hired me on the spot. And really, she gave me a chance. I had no recruiting experience. So as much as I can throughout my career, I have done the same for others. I want to give people the opportunity that I was given. And I've worked for, you named some of the companies, but I've worked for several amazing organizations in my career. Been in tech, medical device, e-commerce, and probably the last 10 years have been really like more security focused and more on the TA leadership side. And the thing I love about being in cyber is I feel like we are making a difference in the world. I'm not an engineer, obviously, and I'm not out there selling the product, but I get the opportunity to bring in people that are helping make the world better and safer in that sense. And it sounds really cheesy and I'm very cheesy, but for me, that makes me feel good. But today I'm currently, as you mentioned, one of the directors of TA at Palo Alto Networks. And my team specifically focuses on go-to-market recruiting across North America. So we're hiring sales people, technical sales, engineers, channel, inside, and across all segments. That's pretty much what I'm doing at Palo Alto Networks today. I'm remote. I'm based in Southern California. So I get over to headquarters occasionally, which is in Santa Clara. But yeah, that's what I'm doing today.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, now I'm with you on the whole security thing. It's definitely, you're able to tap into your sense of purpose. And also, I just think wherever tech goes, I just feel like security's got to follow. Like I know a lot of the hackers I know are now hacking AI and stuff like that. And so whatever happens, wherever technology takes us, I always feel like it's imperative that security follows. So I feel like we'll always be okay.
Yes, yes. You become like security advocate, right? I'm trying to make sure my mom knows not to click on links when they come into her text messages. To me, it feels good. And we spend so much time at work. I want to make sure that I feel good about the work that I'm doing as well. So,
Yeah, definitely. All right. On to resume formatting. I always like to ask this, and I feel like these kind of questions are maybe when the market was booming for people, this wasn't always as essential. But I know there's a lot of still areas of the market that are busy. There's areas of the market where people are really struggling. There might be people that are on the jobs market now for the first time in their lives, if they've been laid off and so on and so forth. What's the ideal way that you like to see a resume formatting? How should things be presented? What's the best way for people to capture attention and get interviews and get back off the market if they've found themselves on the wrong side of things?
This is such a loaded question, right? We probably spend our entire time talking about this because I do feel like such a personal preference, which then makes it super challenging for job seekers, right? Because what I like may be different than what you like on a resume, right? But my very high level advice is just creating an effective resume is really about making a great first impression, clearly presenting your qualifications and accomplishments, right? What I mean is most recruiters can spend literally like 10 seconds, maybe that's harsh and exaggerated, but literally very little time scanning a resume to decide if the candidate is worth looking at more, right? They don't have the job specifications we're looking for, right? So a couple of things that are very, I think most people agree. Do not have a resume that is 5 pages long. That is the one thing that I don't know about you, but it drives me crazy because I past page one, I'm getting unfocused, right? So I would try to stick to 1 to 2 pages. 1 page for someone that's earlier in their career, 2 pages or so for someone that has 10 years of experience. I know maybe they've had several jobs, but I would just try to make it as easy to read as possible, right? Like even the font that you're using and making sure that you don't have all these different types of font or different types of formatting going on, right? Just make it very simple. And it literally takes seconds to run it through tools like Grammarly. Use those tools to make sure you don't have spelling errors. Make sure you have fixed any grammatical errors, because there are some interviewers that are very picky about that. And so just taking a couple of extra minutes to make sure you do that, I absolutely 100% recommend. And I personally love when resumes include accomplishments versus just your job tasks and have metrics, like you have data to prove what you've accomplished. And lastly, I'm going to jump on the AI train here. There are several tools now that can just help you in your overall search, but specific to your resume, there are resume optimization tools like that job seekers can use, like JobScan, which help you tailor your resume to the job description. And you can also use AI-generated cover letters, keyword optimizers, things to improve your chances of getting noticed. I think anything else that comes to mind, I think, is just more around make sure your information is relevant on your resume. And here's the hard part is, I don't know if you agree with this, but don't oversell yourself. Like most people can spot when you're trying to oversell or over-exaggerate your skills or achievements. So I don't know. I just feel like keep it simple, keep it easy to read, and use the AI tools that are out there, because I really do think they are helpful.
Definitely. And on that last point about overselling, Tina, it's so true. It's like I had a candidate last week. She's actually gone through for final today. She's absolutely brilliant. And she came on and she was just, in the end, I said, look, I can see you can do the job. Please just calm down. Like, you've got it. Because I said, what's going to happen is, I said, I know from talking to you that you can do it. And I can see this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. I said, if you keep talking yourself up this much, you're actually going to create doubt. So if it's like what you're saying, if you push things too hard, people think, hang on a minute, what, why is he or she doing that? What's going on? They almost suspect that you can't do it because you're saying that you can so much. So yeah, I think overselling is a massive one. You just got to keep it on an even keel, if you like, haven't you?
Yes, for sure.
So, also as well, Tina, I actually just Googled the average time spent reviewing a resume. You said 10 seconds. Google says 6 to 7 seconds. So you were being generous.
Okay. I felt like I was being a little harsh, but no, I'm glad to see that Google thinks it's less, because it is interesting how quickly you can look at a resume.
You can, especially if you, it's like for me and you, if we're doing it all day, every day, and have done for a number of years, you just get so quick at spotting what you're looking for, especially if you're playing in the same space all the time. And yeah, on your stuff about grammar errors and stuff, absolutely massive. I think especially in the security space, a lot of roles are not all, some roles are internal, but some roles are working on a consulting basis, and you're presenting reports and findings and emailing end clients and stuff like that. And if that's the case, if there's grammatical errors left and center in your writing and the way that you present findings, that's always going to be an issue for employers. Yes. So yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, JobScan, that works pretty well, does it?
I've heard, I mean, I haven't personally used it too much. I played with it a little bit, but I have a couple of recruiter friends that are on the market looking for jobs, and two of them actually mentioned it to me. So I just started playing around with it recently.
Okay. I'll tell you what I'll send you. I've saved it somewhere in my calendar. I spotted it over the weekend. It was ChatGPT for recruiters. So I'll send you the link on LinkedIn when we get off this pod. I'll send you it, because it looked like it had all been geared up with prompts and everything specifically for recruiters. So that could be quite good. But
fantastic.
Yeah, cool. All right, Tina. When it comes to interview questions, is there anything that you think people should be aware of? Have you got any kind of hints, tips, or advice in terms of preparing for an interview these days?
My biggest advice here is to come prepared. You know, when you, I don't know, I think there's so many times that I've been on the phone with a candidate and they have done zero research about the company. Mm-hmm. So I personally like that, you know, coming to the interview prepared, knowing about the job. It doesn't take a long time to do research on the company, right? Like just simply Googling and going to LinkedIn profiles and all that. It's fairly easy, right? I'd also say again, I'm going to go to AI, but what I've heard, and I don't have a company name on this because I don't want to suggest a company that I haven't heard anything on, but there are actual AI mock interview tools now that you can go and practice interviewing, right? And I just did a quick Google search last week on it, and there's several that come up, but those AI mock interviews will give you feedback on responses, even your body language, just helping you to improve during and how you approach an interview, right? So I definitely suggest that. But interview questions in general, everyone's seems like the common question everyone asks is the tell me about yourself and why should we hire you? And I would take those questions to the next level and use more of the STAR method, right? Situation, task, action, result, to give more in depth, not just, why should I hire you? I wanted to work at Palo Alto Networks for 10 years and I'm so excited to be on this interview. No, I want to be part of a company that, and give actual details and data to support your answer. And I think one of the biggest things, and I feel like I'm doing this right now, is to avoid rambling. So just being clear and confident in your communication, right? One thing, and I don't know what you think about this, but a lot of interviewers that I work with on a day-to-day basis, they love for interviewers to send a follow-up note after. It just leaves such a positive impression with the interviewer, whether it's thanking them or giving them a quick overview of what you discussed. It just sets you apart, and not a lot of people do it anymore. When I first became a recruiter, you did a cover letter, you did thank you note, that was just what you did. And now for some reason that isn't happening, but I do think that it also, from a sales perspective, it helps the interviewer also see just how you might potentially communicate with customers. And so I just think it's a nice touch.
Yeah, no, I do. I think some of these things are, I think that follow-up note, I've seen it before and I used to see it a fair bit. I think it's something as recruiters, Tina, we definitely appreciate that because I feel like we are generally speaking so personable and stuff like that. And I definitely think it goes a long way. On your point as well about people just not being prepared for roles, it's really frustrating at times. So some of the roles that we get are really hard to fill roles. They're still really candidate led. And I know we're only getting them because they're ridiculously hard to fill. And that's why the companies are paying a fee. But on the flip side, we get some roles where I call them relationship roles. It's just where I've known maybe the founder or the hiring manager for years and they give us the role. And I know they could probably place it themselves, but they're quite busy. And in this market, it's a really what I would call a client led role. So I know you've got I'm going to have boatloads of candidates to choose from. And it stuns me on those easy to fill roles. And we're working some now that the way people show up, like you said, I don't mean to sound harsh, but I've got to say how it is. People just show up and they haven't done, never mind 5 minutes, they haven't done 30 seconds research on the company. They haven't looked at anything. They haven't done it. And you just think, God, and then you get talking to them and you realize they've been on the market for some months and they've got families to support and you think, God, just do the basic. Even if it's, I used to say 20 minutes, but even if someone just did 5 or 6 minutes intensive in a room on their own research before every interview, they'd probably stand apart from most and it would probably get them off the market quicker, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you could literally probably go into ChatGPT and tell me about XYZ company. I'm going to interview with XYZ company. What should I know? It'll literally take you a couple minutes, right? Just having some basic information, I think, is always just super important. And it shows your interest in the company. If you don't come prepared, then it feels like you're not maybe super interested in the role. And that's also not good from the interviewer perspective, right? So
Yeah, definitely. I think everything is just, I say it to the team over here all the time, just slow down to speed up. And I can relate it to applying for jobs as well. Instead of applying for 50 jobs, just apply for 5, but actually personalize a message to 2 or 3 hiring managers really nicely. Like you said, do the follow-up email. If people could spend 20 minutes researching a company and the person interviewing just before the interview, I'm sure they would just stand out head and shoulders above every other interview that day. And I'm sure they would get off the market way quicker than trying to copy and paste 500 applications and then write on LinkedIn that the market's terrible and everyone's ignoring them. Because that kind of, that's what everyone else is doing, isn't it? It's just doing it properly. My dad used to have a saying, either do it properly or just don't do it at all. And it's like that, just really dig in, because it does make a difference. And it's a lot nicer when you're on this side of the table as well, Tina, isn't it? It makes things a lot nicer for our job as well.
Exactly.
So yeah, no, cool. All right, those AI mock interviews, I don't know any either, but what I have seen is I saw something on my LinkedIn feed and someone did a video explaining them on a video. So I don't know if that's the same video you've seen, but I saw a really good video. I can't remember the name of the tool, but it did look pretty cool though. It looked pretty good.
I saw one, it was called like AI Apply, or I don't know, but they definitely come up in, because our phones listen to us. So I do get a lot of ads for them now. And I do want to go in there and play around with them as well, because I've interviewed thousands of candidates, but when it comes to myself interviewing, I definitely need some help as well and would love some feedback. So it would be good just to see how it works.
Yeah, it's nice to get feedback from a machine as well instead of a human being. We don't feel like we're on the spot as much. That might be quite nice. I might try it later and not tell anyone.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if it's more gentle than a human. I don't know.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so we've talked about interviews and questions. It's about doing a follow-up after. In terms of, should people have questions prepared? Should they have questions prepared for the end of an interview? How do you think that should go down, Tina? What's the best course of action there for folks?
Yeah, I personally like when candidates ask questions. I think it just goes back to their interest in the company. And also from a recruiting perspective, like, it shows me what is important to you as a candidate. And I don't have to necessarily ask you, right? If you're asking about the culture or career advancement, I know those are things that are important to you. So I think having just a handful of questions ready to ask, and before the call, even prioritizing those questions, what are the most important? And if you have time, then you have these others. And if you don't get all your questions answered, I think it's always okay to ask if you can have more time scheduled in the future. I don't see enough candidates do that, to be honest. I think they just think our 30, 45, whatever, however long your interview is over. But I always encourage candidates, like, hey, if you need more time, just let me know. I think that's our job when we're committing to being on an interview team. That's the role you play, right? So I think more candidates need to spend time. This is such an important decision in our lives. So we should absolutely take the time to get the information we need to make a decision. Either way, right? This might not be the company for me, or it is, and I'm super excited, right? So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I always say to candidates, obviously I'll have a good chat with them first and I'll interview them first before they get to any of my clients. But I always say to candidates, please just ask away, because everyone wants the same thing. Like, I know my clients are the same as probably every other company out there, which is everyone wants someone to be making a long-term move, to stick around for a long time and genuinely be happy to do so. If you ask any questions, they're going to be honest, forthcoming, transparent. They're going to tell you how it is, because the last thing anyone wants is for someone to start and be looking around again in 6 to 12 months time. So I always think just ask away, because no one's going to hide anything, because everyone's got the same goal.
Yeah, correct.
So cool. All right, then, Tina, this might be quite a tricky one to ask, but I'll ask anyway. What's the best interview you've ever done, and why was it the best interview?
That's a tough question. I've definitely had some very memorable experiences, both good and bad. I think probably the most memorable, I don't know if it's the best, but is the first software engineer I ever hired when I was back at Applied Signal Technology, which is not even on my LinkedIn profile. It was my first recruiting job. And it's just memorable, right? I've just interviewed so many great people in my career, and it's hard for me to choose one, but that one is memorable. But I think for an interview to be the best, or really good interviews, I think the best are just those when the candidate and the interviewer are engaging in just a really meaningful two-way conversation. You know, again, we're going back to the candidates being prepared, they're confident, they're curious about the company and the role. They're giving those clear, concise answers. They're giving real life examples, and they're just asking those insightful questions that show their interest. I will flip it on the interviewer side. One of my biggest pet peeves ever is interviewers not coming prepared, not being on time, but they need to create a comfortable environment. It is very tough to interview, right? So showing openness to discussion, making it just makes a big difference for a candidate, right? Mm-hmm. I think the magic really happens when there's alignment and values, cultures, goals that just make the interview feel more like a productive conversation than a more formal Q&A.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, having that more conversational style, that's definitely the way it should be done and more of the modern way. I think too formal these days.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel right anymore, does it? I think especially since COVID, I don't know, like we're all just so much more real with each other, I feel like, don't you?
Yes, yes. And it's finding the balance, right? At my current company, we do very structured interviews and we have very specific like interview guides we follow. And so finding that balance of getting the information, but just also helping that candidate to feel comfortable and just leading the conversation to get what both people are there to get, I guess is the best way to explain it.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to when people come to an interview, it would have been years ago, you would have been putting a suit on and a shirt and tie, and you would have been getting in your car or getting the tram or the bus or the train and actually traveling to be somewhere. Whereas these days, it is literally a few clicks and you're on an interview. I wonder if kind of we're all taking interviews almost a little bit for granted these days because it is so easy. Interview, you don't need to go anywhere anymore. So everyone's just, yeah, got an interview. And it's, yeah, I can remember when I was first looking at our interview ratio stats as an agency straight when we got into COVID and everything went fully remote. And I was looking and the stats were just completely blown out. And essentially, I just came to the conclusion that it was just so easy for people to do an interview. And I wonder if sometimes we almost forget that, hang on, this is an interview. This is really valuable. This is really important. I wonder if that's maybe part of it sometimes.
Yeah, possibly. I do think about that as well. We are definitely much more relaxed. I still have candidates that will dress up on a Zoom in their suits. And then I have some that are wearing a t-shirt. And I think it's definitely much more relaxed than it used to be, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you reckon is the optimal attire these days? Because that is I do get asked that question sometimes, and I think it can perhaps vary from company to company, but what do you reckon the best for that?
That's a good question. For me personally, I think just you're representing yourself and your brand. And so whatever that means to you, right? Like, for me, I've worked in tech for a long time, and it is definitely much more casual than maybe other industries at times. But I also work with salespeople who do tend to dress up because they're going to customers. And so my approach is always, I'd rather be overdressed than underdressed. And it also just shows you're taking it serious. So I lean more towards, I'd rather you put the extra effort than not. So
yeah, no, that's definitely right. If you overdress, I don't think that's really ever going to be held against you. But if it goes the other way, it could easily. So yes, yeah. Probably from this as err on the side of caution, and if in doubt, dress up.
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. So yeah, Tina, we talk a lot about communication skills on the pod. I feel like in the security world especially, a little bit of a generalization, but I feel like a lot of people want to and at times need to improve communication skills. It's not always an area that traditionally has been talked about as much in security, although as I do think it's being talked about a bit more these days. But have you got any hints, tips or advice out there that want to get better at communicating?
Yeah, I would say a lot of times, especially on interviews, I'll use that as an example. We as interviewers and candidates both need to really, we all need to practice active listening, right? Really paying attention to what's being said before formulating a response. I think we ask a quick candidate a question and they've practiced, they have their information ready, but it's not even really, you're answering something that I didn't even really ask you, right? Like I really see that often. So I think just really paying attention, making sure you are not rambling. Again, we talked about that earlier, and I think honestly, the best thing I would suggest for like the communication piece is just going to, again, talking about the mock interviews. That might help a lot of people, right? Just to see how they are viewed through camera. You can see, you can look at how your body language, eye contact, how your posture is. A lot of people, it's not just in the words that you say, but it's also in your, you have, might have nervous habits that you don't even know that you're doing, right? You might be moving your fingers a lot, or just, I think little things like that are, I think would be really helpful in improving communication.
Yeah, definitely. That active listening one is, it sounds simple, but it's actually really, I find it's really hard to be a good listener. Like it is, and it's, I think so many people interrupt because they've got a really good idea in their head and they feel like they're going to forget. So they interrupt you mid-sentence, and it is that it really does kill the vibe when it comes to communication. But I noticed it since I started doing the pod. Like I was like, God, I really do have to listen. Like when you're doing a podcast, you have to listen really well to be able to ask follow-up questions and keep the pod going. So it's like I found it really helped my active listening skills. But yeah, I think it's such an important skill set. And just some of these things, like people think, hang on, listening. But if you're a good listener, yeah, you're rocking. Like that's such a valuable skill set that not everyone has. It's difficult to master some of these things, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's something you always have to continue to work on. It's not something you just get it and then you can move on. I think you always have to work on improving communication. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think so. And even like paying attention, it's like I've got Slack here now. We're in this podcast studio. I've got my email open. I've got my calendar open. I've got LinkedIn open. I've got LinkedIn Recruiter. It's so easy to get distracted, isn't it?
It is. It really is. You got to mute some of those things sometimes.
But the worst thing is I don't know about you, but have you got them all on your phone as well? Have you got all LinkedIn and everything on your, I've got everything like Slack, LinkedIn. I've got about 3 or 4 different inboxes on my email, just all on my phone. And it just, especially when you're working across multiple time zones, there is never a time where that phone just isn't pinging. I'm not sure how good it is for your sleep, but yeah, maybe a second phone. I need to get a second phone for Christmas.
Yeah. No, you know what you have to do? You have to learn to mute those things when you are taking a break, right? Mute notifications so that you're not going in there. Like you deserve that free time, you know, of no interruptions of your rest time, right? So
I think it's true because you're never giving, one of my friends told me that you're never giving your like your central nervous system like a chance to actually chill and relax and just recover. If it's always like reacting to a beep or a sound or something, like you're never actually chilling. Yeah, cool. Any tips or hints for like juniors out there trying to break in or reach their full potential? I presume you get reached out to a lot by people at that end of the market. I know I do, Tina, and it's, to be brutally honest, I used to get back to every single person, but I get hit so much. I get hit so often with messages from juniors saying, can you do this? Can you do that? And it is hard to keep up with everything. And I try and help out and I at least try and ask the question on the pod, the best way to break in or any hints, tips and advice for juniors that are trying to get into security.
Yeah, I do get a lot of those messages as well. And again, as someone who was given an opportunity, I'm also very sensitive to that. And I do try and respond to every single person. But I guess the biggest advice I could give to someone is to find a mentor. Finding a mentor for me early in my career, that was just so pivotal and really accelerated my career growth. Just a mentor is going to give you the guidance, the sharing their valuable experience and help you really navigate through challenges. And my son's earlier in career and he wanted to make a career shift. And I told him the same thing, go out there and find people to talk to and learn from. And it just helps you grow. And I absolutely look for learning platforms. I work for a large company and we have great resources here. But that, I think a lot of it is just staying organized, keeping yourself motivated and setting goals for yourself on what you want to do. You can't expect, I have zero cyber experience and now I want to go be this huge role with an organization, right? Set mini goals for yourself and really track your progress so you can see what you've done. But I always suggest, and I even tell my own team now, I do have, you know, some earlier in career recruiters on my team, and I've told them the same thing. Get a mentor. Your leader is there. Obviously, I'm here to help you, but it's just such a great way to get that help from someone outside of your direct leadership.
It is definitely. I don't know if you're the same as me, but I sometimes just like to just talk it out, even if you just go around the houses a bit and you almost come back to the same or a similar answer to what you thought in the first place. Just your thoughts, views and opinions. I suppose it's like the opposite to bottling something up. It's like you're getting it out in the open and you're having that chat and you're talking it out, and it just makes you feel a damn sight better about any issues or problems you have, doesn't it?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And it's a person outside of your direct leader that there's some things maybe you don't want to share with your leader or pivots you want to make. And some people just aren't comfortable with that. But I just think my mentor, she just was so wonderful for me in my career. And I just can't recommend that enough.
Yeah, very good. And in terms of books, podcasts or online content, is there anything out there that could be just self-help? It could be career-related, anything. I used to say just books, but it can be a book or a podcast or anything online that you've consumed that could be helpful for the listeners' career growth.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple out there that I think of that I've read and still go back to, just depending on, you know, where I've been at in my career. But from a recruiting perspective, one that really helped me a lot was Who, the A Method for Hiring. Not sure if you're familiar with that, but it's a book that's really talks about evidence-based approach to hiring, like using scorecards, asking the right questions, how to evaluate candidates effectively. I read that when I was back at Four Scout, and it just totally shifted my mindset from a recruiting perspective. The other one that I love is called Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. That was a super impactful book for me as I moved into leadership. She just talks a lot about leading with vulnerability and empathy, how important it is to stay curious with your team, and just there's like strategies for leading with your heart, which sounds very, I don't know, I can't think of the word, but it sounds a little, what, leading with heart, but just I think during the pandemic, that really helped me a lot, and just building a stronger team overall. So that was a really impactful book for me. And then one that I recently read, and we actually were lucky at Palo Alto Networks to have the author come and talk with us, was Radical Candor. And that book is really focused on building strong relationships through open communication. So I think whether you're a recruiter, leader, earlier in career, just trying to figure things out, I think there's some really important or really key things you can learn in there to help you build trust in teams and how to give feedback. So those are probably the three I would say resonate with me.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. I wasn't expecting to get three, so thank you very much. That's good.
I can never just give one thing. I'm always like, I can't have a favorite.
Yeah, that's good. And I tell you what, I really like that. The A Method for Hiring sounds really good, because we do stuff with scorecards and we do things with, we have the skills matrix and stuff like that. I don't know if you've got anything similar. And I do find it makes it, especially if you've got, like when we're building shortlists and stuff this side, or if we've got a few people in the process and we really like a few and we can fall back onto these things. So I'd definitely like to read that. That sounds pretty good.
Yes, definitely take a look at it. It's a great book.
Cool. All right, Tina, brilliant. Thank you. I think we've about covered anything. Is there anything we've missed out? I think we've about nailed it.
We've covered everything, and hopefully I didn't ramble too much, and I listened to my own advice.
it's been good. It's been really nice. I know we were back and forward a bit, and I was a bit late today, so we've had a little bit of an issue trying to get me and you sat down together, but we got there in the end, and it was well worth it. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again. Really nice to see you, and catch up soon.
Thank you. Take care.